We're going to be studying in Luke chapter 16, if you would open your Bible to that text. If you're visiting with us, thank you so much for being here today, and we hope that if you have an opportunity, you'll be with us again. And if you'll stick around for a few minutes afterwards, we'd like the opportunity to get to know you. Luke chapter 16, we're going to read a parable. It's not the easiest of Jesus' parables to understand. Jesus did not intend for all of his parables to be immediately understandable. If you're calling Matthew 13, he would give some parables that even now when we know the meaning, it's clear to us, but not necessarily at the time. He's talking to an agricultural community, and he would stand up and he would say, "A sower went forth to sow. There's some seed here, this happened, some seed there, that happened, some seed here, that happened, seed here, that happened." He was done with that parable. And the apostles asked why he said. And he wasn't other parables are very, very clear and easy. This one we're meant to understand. But it's not as obvious on the surface as some. Partly because it uses an unsavory character to teach us a lesson. But it's not the only time in the Bible where something negative is used to teach a lesson, as we'll see. Let's read it. Chapter 16, verse 1. He said also unto the disciples, "There was a certain rich man who had a steward. The same was accused unto him that he was wasting his goods." Now, the question might come up, well, was he really or not? As we're going to see later in the text, he's going to say the unrighteous steward. So take it for granted that the reason he's accused of mishandling things is because he was. "There was a certain rich man who had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he was wasting his goods. He called him and he said, 'What is this I hear of you? Render the account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be a steward.' The steward said within himself, 'What shall I do, seeing that my Lord takes away the stewardship from me? I have not strength to dig, to beg. I am ashamed.'" So he's in a bind. A steward, he's a money manager. And so he handles the accounts and stuff. And back then, as today, sometimes the people that you put in charge of handling the money get some sticky fingers and are not doing some things they're supposed to do. And so he's being fired, rendering the accounts. Well, he's got to get, he's losing this job, so what's going to be the predominant thing on his mind? You know, where do I go next? Well, here's two options. Manual labor. I'm too weak. Begging. I'm too proud. So what am I going to do? He comes up with an idea. "I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. Calling to him each one of his Lord's debtors, he said to the first, 'How much do you owe my Lord?' He said, 100 measures of oil. He said to him, 'Take your bond, sit down, and quickly write 50. Then he said to another, 'How much do you owe?' And he said, 100 measures of wheat. He said to him, 'Take your bond, write 80. His Lord commended the unrighteous steward because he had done wisely, or some translations say shrewdly. For the sons of this world are for their own generation wiser than the sons of light. I say to you, make to yourselves friends by reason, excuse me, I say to you, make to yourselves friends by means of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when it shall fail, they may receive you into the eternal tabernacles. He that is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much. He that is unrighteous in a very little is unrighteous also in much. If therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the two riches? If you have not been faithful with what is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, I don't think the primary point of this text, although it does say that entrusted with you of another's, I don't think the primary point here is that we're stewards. It uses a steward as an illustration. Other times it's vineyard workers as an illustration. Other times it's fishing as an illustration. Other times it's farming an illustration, etc. But what's the steward being commended for? Look what his motive was. I have not strength to dig. To beg I am ashamed. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. He's making friends with this money. This isn't going to work. That's not going to work. But I have at my disposal the opportunity to get some people on my side to treat me favorably. I have at my disposal the chance to grease somebody else's palm, and then I'll scratch their back, they'll scratch mine. The master doesn't say, hey, you're a really, really good steward. That's what I was wanting all along, to have all the people that owed me money to pay me less. He's saying, you did wisely. He commended the unrighteous steward because he'd done shrewdly. It's not how he had handled his stewardship. It's what he does now, thinking about the consequences. I'm going to do this so that they'll give me a place to live. They'll give me a job. They'll give me an opportunity. I'll be able to get into that house. And then Jesus says, sometimes the wicked people living in darkness in this world are smarter than the people who are supposed to be sons of light, basically. Because what did he understand? He understood that this gig was up. And based on how he behaved now would affect what would happen next. What's the lesson Jesus wants us to learn from that? This gig will soon enough be up. And we need to be being generous so that we will have people to welcome us in. Look at it again. He said, I know what to do so that when I'm put out of the stewardship, they may receive me. Verse 9, Jesus says, I say to you, here's his application, make to yourselves friends by means of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when it shall fail, they may receive you into eternal tabernacles. How does that work? Well, Matthew 25. Turn back over there. Verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the angels with him, and he shall sit on the throne of his glory, before him shall be gathered all the nations, and he will separate them one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll put the sheep on the right hand and the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on the right hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. Sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or athirst and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and took you in, or naked and clothed you? When did we see you sick or in prison and came to you? And the king shall answer and say to them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you did it unto one of these my brethren, even the least, You did it to me. So Jesus chooses here to show this picture of judgment. And judgment will involve, we know from the Bible, more things than just this one issue. But here he focuses on this issue, and what does he make clear? These sheep are going to go into eternal life. He said, you come in because when I was in those situations, you helped me. And when they did that was when they helped the least of these, his brethren. So tie it back to the unrighteous steward. What did he do? He realized, I've got an opportunity here to be generous and help some people. If he had not helped anybody, he would have been out of a job and just stuck. So since this was ending, he was generous with it so that he would have a place to go. Jesus said, get a clue from that. If a wicked guy can figure that out, you ought to be able to figure that out. This is not the only time Jesus used unrighteous behavior to illustrate a principle. How did Jesus say his return will be? I will come as a thief in the night. It doesn't mean that Jesus is going to rob you. It's the suddenness of the thief. The thief doesn't say, you're going to be home today around 11. He's planning on coming robbing stuff. Are you going to be home then? How about one? He doesn't do that. He shows up without warning. That's the part. The motive is a parallel. It's the suddenness without warning. That's what's parallel. And so here, he's saying, what you should, don't be an unrighteous person. Don't be, but learn to have the shrewdness that he did of realizing that you've got opportunities now to be being generous. It's going to benefit you later. That's what he's saying you learn from the unrighteous steward, not the other part. Then he says to the goats, and sorry for y'all who are always on the goat side, we couldn't stand like that. Switch it one day. Depart from me. One. And realizes this is Jesus telling us what he's going to do at judgment. The point here is that we need to be thinking about what we are doing now towards those that we could be helping. He said to those on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into the eternal fire which is prepared for the devil and his angels. I was hungry, you did not give me to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, you took me not in. Naked, ye clothed me not. Sick and in prison, ye visited me not. Then they'll say, Lord, when did we see you hungry or athirst or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and not minister to you? Then he shall answer them, truly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it not unto one of these least, you did it not unto me. These shall go away into eternal punishment. The righteous into eternal life. How do we behave with our opportunities, with our finances, with people that are in need around us? We can't get to the day of judgment and say, oh, I didn't know this was going to be required, because he made it pretty clear right there. The unrighteous steward realized this is ending. And he realized he needed to be generous now if he wanted to be received in later. Jesus is telling us to learn that lesson that even a wicked, unrighteous, crooked steward understood. What keeps us from being generous if we're not being generous? One thing, we can say, well, I've got all these bills. Bills for what? All these bills for stuff. Who signed up for those bills? Me. It's easy for us to take the money coming in and just viewing it as, oh, there's some more for me, there's some more for me, there's some more for me, there's some more for me. And it's easy enough also in this country, because there's lots of social safety nets, there's lots of programs, there's lots of people that just won't work. It's easy to dismiss it and say, well, everybody that, you know, is taking care of themselves, they don't have any need anyway, so I don't need to help anybody. That's just not true. That's not the case in several ways. It's just not so. Yes, there are a lot of programs, and yes, if you just walk through a city and the people that have their hand out the farthest, you just start putting cash in, that's probably not feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, or giving drink to the, well, you may be giving drink to the, but not to the thirsty. That's probably not the most effective way to do it, because there's a lot of people that just, that's how they handle their drug and alcohol problem, or just their desire to get money. That doesn't mean there aren't people that don't need money. There's a lot of people in tight spots. I told you about my friend, one of the girls baptized over in Upper Darby. When I met her, she didn't have a home. Her husband had divorced her. She was living at her mom's and her friend's, and things are not that cheap over there. And she was working two jobs for months and finally got her first apartment. Finally got her apartment. It was, one room was about that big. No, I would say it was about that big. That was, I guess, the living room. And it had a eat-in kitchen. And it had a hallway and a closet and a bathroom. That was it for her mom and her daughter and her son. No bedrooms in the house. But this was the most she could afford. Her total furniture, if you added it up all together, would have been one item. They had an inflatable mattress. That was the only chair they had. That was the only sofa they had. That was the only bed they had. She was thrilled to get that apartment. Thrilled to get it. And working hard to have it. And it was right near where we worshiped. And so the first day she got it, she had the kids all dressed up and came to church, and she was just thrilled. And so, of course, we got busy and looking on Craigslist and stuff and getting some furniture in there and everything. But there are people trying and working that have needs. There are also people that have needs that are not financial. There are people getting money from the government that shouldn't be, that are scamming and taking advantage of everybody else. And there's also people waiting, people who are hurting and people who are really in a bind, waiting for all the paperwork to get through. There are people who might have money, but they need something else from you or from me. I was sick and you visited me. Germs don't care how much money you got. They will, you know, a broken leg doesn't care how much money you've got. A car accident doesn't care how much money you've got. And a terrible chronic disease doesn't care about how much money you've got. All sorts of situations where people need help. Look at James chapter 2. Verse 14. What does it profit, my brothers? This is James chapter 2, verse 14. What does it profit, my brothers, if a man says he has faith but has not works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and in lack of daily food, and one of you say to them, go in peace, be warmed, be filled, and yet you give them not the things needful to the body, what does it profit? Look at 1 John chapter 3. Verse 16, hereby we know love because he laid down his life for us. We ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. Lay down our lives for the brethren. Whoever has the world's good and beholds his brother in need and shuts up his compassion from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither with the tongue, but in deed and truth. Saying, hope you get warm. Hope you get some food. Doesn't get anybody warm and doesn't get anybody any food. That's just in word, in tongue. It's got to be followed with action. Jesus says he's going to judge us by that. Back in Proverbs, it said, I think it's chapter 19, yeah. Whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord. He will repay him for his deed. And it's not just brethren. Look at Galatians 6. So then, as we have opportunity, let us work that which is good toward all men, and especially toward them that are the household of the faith. We have a special duty toward these least of these of Jesus' brethren, towards our brothers. But there's times when we're going to see other people. They may not be Christian. They may not believe in God, but it doesn't mean that they don't need to be helped. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, what do the priest and Levite do? They just walk by. And notice, what did Jesus say? This is very interesting. When he saw him, he did what? The priest moved to the other side. When the Levite saw him, he did what? Moved to the other side. Why do you suppose he moved to the other side? The closer you walk to him, the closer you see the suffering he's in, and the more he may be looking at you and expecting something from you. So what's very much easier to do? I don't want to see that suffering. I don't want to know too much about it. I don't want to avoid eye contact. The Good Samaritan, what did he do? When he saw him, he was moved with compassion. Not because he was a fellow Samaritan. Not because they believed all the same thing. Not because it was somebody who would have even treated him well if the situation had been different. John tells us that Jews didn't have any dealings with Samaritans. But what did the Samaritan do? He did to him what he would want done if it was him. This is very much about what it means to be a Christian. What we do to serve other people. There are people in financial need, and in all sorts of ways that people can be in financial need. There are people that need our time. There are people that need us to weep with those that weep and rejoice with those that rejoice. There are people who maybe just need to be carried somewhere because they're no longer able to get to that place that they need to go. And it's fully part of our responsibility to be doing. How many times in the Old Testament did it talk about the widows and the orphans and just looking out for those in desperate situations and that need our help? Let's go back to our text in Luke 16. There's a couple more points we want to make. Jesus said, just like the Lord commended this unrighteous steward, not for being unrighteous, but because he was clever and bright enough to figure this out, the sons of the world for their own generation are being wiser than sons of light. Make to yourself friends by means of the mammon of unrighteousness. This money that can be, it's not good in and of itself. It represents labor. It can do good things. But we can do good things with it so that when it fails, they may receive you into eternal tabernacles. He that is faithful in a very little, look at this, he that is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much. He that is unrighteous in little is unrighteous in much. I want to finish with some thoughts on the difference between little and much. Faithful in little, faithful in much, unrighteous in little, unrighteous in much. Sometimes it is the little things in life that make a big, big difference. All you young people that ever went to Gardner's camp and heard Jerry Falk tell his story about what eventually led to his conversion know this story. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. But he attributes the reason he's a Christian today, of course the Bible says seeking you shall find, but he knows is a human chain. It started with a woman from Florida that he doesn't know, never met, and will never know who she is. But years ago, she was working in New Jersey as a nanny for another woman who wasn't a Christian. And she got overpaid by a few coins. She didn't have a car. She walked back to her employer and gave back the change. See how she was being faithful in a little? That little thing made a big difference. It made that woman think, what made her do that? Why would she do that? And so she got to talking to her, and she ended up becoming a Christian. Now, she had a ne'er-do-well son who burned down the apartment and, you know, was just in a scammer and all sorts of stuff. He wasn't living right, but his mom was now a Christian, and even though he was living a bad life, he respected what his mom was. He had a buddy at school who they participated in scams together and dishonest stuff together. And one day they were talking about religion or something, and he asked, I don't know, what are you, this or that, some denomination? The guy says, well, I'm not anything, but if I ever become something, what I want to be is just a Christian. Because he'd learned that from his mother, who had been converted by the honesty of that lady sometime before. And the friend was Jerry. And Jerry, that idea just really hit him. Just a Christian? And he got to thinking about it, and he ended up repenting and coming to the Lord and being baptized in Jesus Christ and serving him and became preaching the gospel and has worked here and in Europe and has influenced a number of people. And who does it go back to in that little chain there? Somebody that was faithful in what? Very little. New York City, if you will remember in the 80s, how many of you remember driving through New York City in the 80s? Remember the skeleton cars? Those things, they'd be sitting on the side of the road on I-95, and they'd be sitting there with no wheels, sometimes the engine's gone, just stripped, and then they're left there. There was graffiti everywhere, there was a lot of crime and everything. Do you remember how Rudy Giuliani cleaned that up? Do you remember the philosophy? There's a book, I think it's called Broken Windows or something. The idea was you start cracking down on the little stuff. And it had a huge effect. Because in a neighborhood where you allow the broken windows to stay, then people don't mind breaking a few more. And you know, if you got a bunch of broken windows and crime and gunshots and stuff, when somebody hears a window break, is anybody going to call the cops? No, it's what becomes tolerated. Well, you know, in Biggerville, if you hear, clang, you know, a window break in the middle of the night, there's going to be neighbors, you know, calling, you know, because that's not what's expected in Biggerville. So they start cracking down on stuff. And if you remember, they cracked down on the squeegeeman on the road, the peep shows on Times Square, got the graffiti off the subway cars and everything. And what happened to the murder rate, if you know about this history? The murder rate went down. Made a big difference in the history of New York City. Sometimes we can get the idea that, well, we'll just do the big things and the little things don't matter. Jesus said, he that's faithful in little things is faithful in big things. And if we're being unrighteous in little things, we'll be unrighteous in big things. You may not be in a position yourself to do something big, but we can do something little. Luke chapter 21. Jesus looked up and he saw rich men that were casting their gifts into the treasury, and he saw a certain poor woman casting in two mites, two little coins of very little worth. You know, there's some, people have discussed before, if you drop a penny, would you pick it up? Some people pick it up. It's a penny. Pick it up. Other people, it's a penny. Why bend over? This woman had two little coins. You know what she did with them? She put it in the treasury there. He said, of a truth, I say to you, this poor woman cast in more than they all. For all these did of their superfluity, of their abundance, cast in their gifts. But she, of her want, did cast in all the living she had. It wasn't very much, but it was a little thing. It was a big thing to her. It was little to anybody else looking. But what about Jesus? Jesus did not pass out many compliments in the Gospels. He did a few. But if you're next time you're reading through, if you'll notice, there's not a whole lot of compliments Jesus passes out. Jesus complimented her. Little things can make a difference. Years ago, I read an article from CEOs that are hiring people for big, big, big positions. And interviewed a number of CEOs that had the same practice. When there's somebody they're going to hire for a high, high paying job, they go out to dinner with them and they watch to see how they treat the servers. Because they said, we know how they're going to treat us. I'm in a position, you know, to say yes or no to this big fat salary. He wants to know how he treats people at the other end of the spectrum. And the people that won't treat the service well, they don't get the job because they see what kind of person that is. Little things matter. And more than how we look to the CEO, think about how we look to the Lord. When we're faced with something big, let's do what's righteous. When we're faced with something little, let's do what's righteous. I had a friend one time, and I don't know what his habit was, but I remember in college he was talking about this, wanted to work for this particular company so that he could get rich, and once he got rich, then he was going to give a third of his income away to charity. Well, maybe a good test to find out whether or not somebody would do that or not is to think about what they're doing, you know, with what they have. Some people go through life wanting to do something big for show here and there. Blow the trumpet. You know, everybody look at this. What did Abraham Lincoln say? You can fool all the people some of the time. Some of the people all of the time. But you can't fool all the people all the time. And are we ever going to fool God? If we go through life deciding, well, I'll do something big here or there, more important is just consistently doing what's right in those little things, day to day, doing little things right. And then when something big comes along, we can also be counted on to do what's right. If you need to respond this morning to the invitation, won't you do so as you stand and sing?